This is the B&J podcast. Parents, don't let your children listen to this fucking filth, fucking filth, fucking filth.
This episode of the B&J podcast is brought to you by Go Girl, a female urination device. Don't take life sitting down. It's made of medical grade silicone and it's reusable and earth friendly. And it's basically for women who don't want to pee sitting down. It's like a little urine device. And so you just, their instructions, just hold Go Girl against your body, forming a seal. Aim, and well, pee. Pretty simple, huh? And because I know we didn't do a podcast last week because y'all were camping, they say that it's a good good thing to use while you're out camping.
I find it a little disturbing that it has the same name as an energy drink. It's targeted towards women.
So, you can buy a single one on gogirl.com. A single one costs $12.99. A three-pack for $34.97. They also sell a 13-pack for $135. You can also buy a little extension to it, so like with a tube, and that costs $9 in the combo of a single Go Girl and a tube and a resealable bag also. That costs $18. GoGirl.com. Don't take life sitting down.
That's it. That's all we got for the podcast this
That's
week.
It.
It's just a Go Girl.
Oh, by the way, we opened up with Annie, her song Two of Hearts, the cover of Stacey Q. I've been in a sort of a pop music mode lately, and when I go pop music, I don't go Britney Spears or Madonna. I go Annie and Robin and weird shit.
Well, Robin's good.
Robin is really good.
But yeah, I've had the Britney Spears song from Spring Breakers stuck in my head.
That is such a good scene.
Oh, it's the best scene of film last year. Speaking of good movies, actually, that is one thing I can mention. I went and saw Snowpiercer yesterday, which was excellent, and is the second movie this year I've seen I haven't seen very many movies this year in the theater, but it's the second one I've been to see in the theater that had both Tilda Swinton and John Hurt in it.
I hear Snowpiercer, but that's the one about the train.
Yeah.
With the crane.
Yeah, with the,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that's really good.
It's really good.
He directed The Host, right?
That's correct.
I rewatched that the other day.
And it's got that same sort of, weird, quirky, tone shift thing going on that The Host does too and does really well. Like, that's really what that guy is best at is, good characterization on people and also going from incredibly goofy to really, like, kind of serious and a little creepy, like, in a flash. So, and making it work.
Yeah, so for those with Amazon Prime, The Host is on Amazon Prime.
And on Netflix, I believe.
And Netflix, I think, yes. And it's a great movie. It's a reimagining of a monster movie. But there's some politics involved. There's some slapstick involved. The
creature effects are really good,
The
too.
Creature effects are really good. The best scene has to be when the family first grieves.
Whatever the evacuation shelter.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
amazing.
They're grieving because that's how Koreans grieve. It's just this full on, I'm just going to let all of my balls hang out and I don't give a shit. And because we Koreans, we do mourning very well.
Yeah.
We're conquered people.
Matt and I went to see that in the theater, when it came out. The Host, and we were the only people in the theater.
I saw it in Burbank, mm-hmm. and there were a couple other people there with me, and
but it was weird because it got kind of a wide release.
It did,
and it didn't. I don't think it did very well, but I know, almost everyone I know has seen it and loves it because
everyone who left the movie was actually really impressed. Like there was this one kid who was there with his father. These white people, and they were very impressed with the movie.
Well, because you're not used to seeing, especially if you watch a lot of Asian movies, you're not used to seeing good creature effects. Number one,
yeah,
and you're not used to seeing, you know, a movie that is put together basically in a Western style. I mean, the movie is, although it has a lot of elements that are very explicitly culturally Korean, it's mm-hmm. it's also done in a very Western film style. It's very entertaining, very easy, very easily accessible. And Snowpiercer, which is mostly in English, and features a couple of the same people who are in The Host. The one of the characters is, I think, was the girl who played the little girl in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the guy who played the dad and was the guy from Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance is in it as well.
Cool.
And then Tilda's amazing.
Tilda's always amazing.
She is, and she's been on a roll this year. She's been in two of, again, I haven't seen that many movies this year, but two of the top ones featured her. The other one being Only Lovers Left Alive, which I don't think I talked about on the podcast, but as soon as it hits Blu-ray, DVD, or whatever, make sure you watch that movie because it's amazing.
Yes, sir. So how was camping?
Camping was great. It was the first time that we'd really gone much outside our like a developed campground. Which may sound weird if you don't camp in California much, but there's very, very strict rules about where you can do campfires or any kind of outdoor cooking. So in order for us to, you know, be able to do that stuff, you have to be in either a developed campground or an approved undeveloped campground with a campfire permit, which we got. And what... the nice, you know, the big difference is that in a developed campground, you have like a little space that is yours, and you're depending on the campground, you can be a little ways away from people or pretty close up to people. And in this case, we had a huge area that was ours, and we couldn't see anyone from where we were. It wasn't too far off the beaten track. Jude, my girlfriend's dog, got to be off leash and run around a lot, and just had we had a really great time.
Do you think she could have used Go Girl?
It would have been kind of unnecessary. If you want to get into the specifics of camping, I realized something this time, which is I don't think I can take a shit in the woods. I mean, I'm sure if you really, really, like, hunkered down and got me to, you know, to have to do it, I could probably do it. But, like, I held it for 2 days rather than
really?
To shit in the woods. And I usually go to the bathroom kind of a lot.
So I've shit in the woods before, and I've never camped.
Yeah, but
then again,
you're a bear.
And then I have the whole Louisiana thing going on.
Well, and I mean, again, it wasn't like it was trying or anything. It was just like, it just was very, it's very uncomfortable to like kind of squat down and hold yourself up while you're also trying to poop.
Oh, and I'm Korean too, so that comes naturally.
Yeah. I guess it's actually the more preferred natural position is to squat rather than sitting, but I really like sitting.
It makes it easier.
Much easier.
A lot more comfort.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where exactly were you guys at?
We're in Sequoia National Forest. The place we were at was really close to where it was about 10 miles away from the Trail of 100 Giants, which is the monument that mm-hmm. was dedicated by Bill Clinton, signed on as a national monument under first George Bush and then opened by Clinton, and it's a little trail that goes about a mile or so, is paved for easy disability access, and goes through the sequoias, which are these giant trees. If you've never seen them, they're a type of redwood, I believe, and they're just these huge old trees, over 1,000 years old in a lot of cases.
Majestic.
It is incredibly majestic. And they don't grow anywhere outside of California.
So suck it.
Yeah. They're the only subspecies of that particular type of tree that's still extant. So
you said extant.
I say extant a lot. I use that word probably more than any other human being who doesn't work in the sciences does.
You just want to be smart.
I mean, what can we talk about this week? Should we talk about Hobby Lobby a little bit? I mean,
Hobby Lobby. That's such a cute name, by the way, Hobby Lobby.
I know, it's too bad that they're such terrible people, right?
I mean, yeah, who would think that, you know, a company with, or as the Supreme Court would call them, a citizen with such a cute name would be such cunts?
And really hate, you know, actual people with cunts.
I mean, there's a whole meme that's been going around the last several years mm-hmm. where, I don't think it's a meme necessarily, but just this sort of thing that's been going around on Facebook and Twitter saying that if a woman's vagina was an actual gun, maybe Republicans would save it. Or, you know, whatnot. Which is, you know, funny, cynical, but funny. I mean, I don't get why all this hate on women.
Well, the interesting thing about it to me is that, in this case, it doesn't seem at all like it's actually about reproductive rights for a change. It seems like it is entirely about trying to undermine the Affordable Care Act. And that's really what it is. Like, if it was, even according to their own position, they're saying that, you know, like, oh, we believe people have the right to choose, which is, A, obviously not true. And also, their retirement plans allow for investment in birth control companies that make birth control that they object to on a moral ground. You don't have a right to object on a moral ground to something that you aren't personally doing, that you are financing. You can't tell your employees you're not allowed to spend your paychecks on this, this, or this. Like, that's not how fucking benefits or payment works. Like, you give someone money in exchange or benefits in exchange for their services to you, and past that point, you should not be involved in it. You don't get to decide what, you know, like, what's covered and what's not covered.
Here's an existential question, mm-hmm. though. So, with all these Christians, you know, saying that they're right, you know, this is, you know, they're the way, Jesus is the light, the way, the mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada. What if they're wrong? What if when they die, they see that God is actually Muslim? Like, do they go, oh, shit?
I would assume that they go, oh, shit. I mean, like, the truth of the matter is that most, you know, like, most of the people that I know, I personally believe, a lot of people that I know believe that they are absolutely wrong. But most of us are good enough in our belief systems, and some Christians are this way too. I don't want to crowd everyone into the same, like, very exclusive Christian bus, but like, a lot of other religions, especially Eastern religions, tend to believe that what you believe isn't as important as, you know, like, understanding that the fundamental idea of your time on Earth should be to make the world a better place and to make things, you know, better and to, you know, commune and harmonize your times on Earth rather than, you know, spending a bunch of time praying and hoping that everyone else gets to go to hell. Like, that's, or, you know, to give them the benefit of the doubt that everyone can be saved by Christ. Like, it's really problematic, and it's pretty much exclusive to the Western religions. The Eastern religions tend to be a little bit more tolerant. Fundamentalists from any religion are assholes, no matter what. Hindu fundamentalists, assholes. So, there are some real asshole Buddhists, which yeah, seems weird, but, like, it's totally true, like, that are violent and horrible.
Yeah, and they're all in Korea.
No, there's a fair number of them in Burma as well. Or Myanmar.
Well, yeah, but I remember this Buddhist temple in the heart of Seoul. Mm-hmm. Two different sects of, I guess they were having a succession crisis.
Yeah.
So the two different factions decided, oh, we're just going to ward out in the temple. And I think they killed, like, there were nine monks that were killed. And, like, a couple police officers were also killed trying to intervene.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
No. I mean, again, any fundamentalists
yes.
in religion are... If you're a fundamentalist, you're an idiot. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is.
And it's really easy to mock people who are really fundamentalists. On the 4th of July, I came across this article.
Uh-huh.
And Bruce LaBruce, the filmmaker, mm-hmm. actually retweeted this out. And so I'm like, okay, let's see what it's all about. And it's called, the title of the article is Power Bottoming, the Most Disturbing New Trend in American
Homosexuality. Oh, but it's from Christwire, yeah.
I was going to get to that.
Damn it, sorry.
You're such an asshole. And of course, you know, we've been fascinating with fisting on this podcast for the last several episodes. And I think it was really, really funny, you know? I mean, it starts out as Christians, the horrors of homosexuality remind us of our humanity and the great demands that God asks of us. And it just, it goes on and on. And they even have a guide, which is very helpful.
You can't even say your own thing.
No. The homosexual will exhibit himself in three basic positions for power bottoming. A. Standing against the wall with one's exposed buttocks swaying out. This is most often employed in public public restrooms and gym showers. B. Kneeling face down with one's hands on the floor and the gluteus maximus.
Gluteus.
Yeah, but that's not what it's...
Oh, it does? It says gluteus?
It says gluteus maximums. Oh, gluteus maximums gesturing upwards. Convenient for abandoned warehouses and private sadomasochistic dungeons.
By the way, those things actually do exist.
Oh, yeah.
In case you're wondering.
Oh, yeah. And then C, lying on one's back with hind legs in the air. As opposed to what other legs? Most often occurring in a domestic setting, such as the bedroom. This posture allows for the deepest form of homosexual penetration. And so I'm reading this, and then I realize, A, it's written, well, it's an old story from 2011, mm-hmm. and it's on Christwire, as Brendan so helpfully mentioned. And of course, I didn't realize that it was a satire site, because, and that's the problem. These fundamentalists are that crazy. They're not so crazy like that, and so it's very easy to believe these sort of satire sites when they're written about.
There's a law on the internet that I can't remember what its name is, but the thesis of it is that satire is indistinguishable from fundamentalist doctrine on the internet without any other stripped of any other context outside of it, like yeah. where it's from, if it was from Christwire. And in fact, Christwire is a really good example of great satire, because it took me probably three or four readings of different articles from there back when it first started showing up in people's feeds and stuff, before any of us realized that it was satire, because it's really good. And it's not until you read through a few different articles that you start realizing, like, they are way too well informed and clever to be actual to actually be that stupid about things. I think that it has some loose affiliation with The Onion, but I'm not sure. But I have this ongoing hatred of quote-unquote satire sites on the internet, because I think that many of them don't understand that creating something that people will just believe without any kind of commentary. I think the best example would be that someone had posted a story about the kid from Fly Young Red, the kid who did the Throw That Boy Pussy song, being signed by, I can't remember if it was 50 Cent's label or some hip-hop star's label.
Mm-hmm.
And the article sounded completely legit. Like, there was nothing funny or clever about it. It just sounded like a news story about something happening. And then it turned out that the site was fake. And I find that a lot of times that satire on the internet falls into one of two things. Either the incredibly obvious and not particularly funny, like, let's fool some people kind of satire, or the plausible news story that gets passed around and is fake, but there's no reason why you would believe it's fake because it's not funny or clever. That's not really satire. Because you're not making a point. The only point you're making is that people will believe things without really checking on them, and that's an obvious fucking thing.
Yeah, we call that performance art. By the way, I heard Shia LaBeouf's, he's going to rehab or something.
Yeah, he's in rehab now.
Oh.
Yeah. I guess I would feel more one way or another on that thing if I had ever felt like he'd done anything worth being interested in.
I did like Nymphomaniac.
Oh, yeah, I still haven't seen it.
You should.
I know. And I should give up on trying to see it in the theater. I should just actually...
Yeah, that's not good. But that was...
No, and he's... I mean, he's not always terrible. Like, I don't have anything particularly against him, but for how controversial and, you know, sort of interesting he thinks he is, I don't get it.
You know...
I mean, I kind of feel the same way about Franco, but Franco at least tries a million different things rather than, like, five.
Yeah, he throws a whole bunch of shit onto the wall, sees what sticks, mm-hmm. you know? And some of it is good. Like, I liked This Is the End.
I did. I really like This Is the End as well.
You know, I like some of his... I saw what he was trying to do with Interior Leather Bar. It was a bit dull. But it was interesting to see.
It seemed, the more I learned about that, actually, the less interested I was in it, but it's an interesting idea. I mean, I still would really like to see an actual, I wish they had, like, the quote-unquote missing 88 yes. minutes or whatever yes. of that movie. Because Cruisin' is a fucking great movie.
I was gonna go somewhere with this. But I have lost my way, which happens very often. And, of course, both Brendan and I had no idea what the fuck we were going to talk about on this podcast, so there are no note cards. We're flying blind.
Yeah.
I was going to say something about... Oh, performance art. So, the problem with Shia LaBeouf, I didn't understand what he was trying to do with his quote-unquote performance art. Like, you know, when he rented that gallery space for a week or whatever, and just have people...
Oh, I'm sorry. The I Am Sorry show?
Yeah.
There's another artist who did almost exactly the same thing, which is, again, why I think it's kind of ridiculous that he thinks that he's clever, or...
Yeah, that's the thing. It just seems so... What he was doing seemed so derivative.
It's incredibly derivative. And, like, it's... I'm sort of in this place now where I'm trying to navigate my way through the difference between, like, appropriation and appreciation, which I think is a really neat way of putting that, like... So, hipster girls or guys who wear Native American... trappings and stuff who are culturally appropriating styles because they look neat are fucking annoying. Like, mm-hmm. we can all agree on that.
Yes.
But I do also think that a large part of American culture is taking other cultural ideas and cultural themes from places and sort of like remixing or reworking them. And I think as long as that's done in a way that is interesting, respectful, and not completely at odds with the original intent, then it's okay. Like the problem with Red Face or any of the other kinds of cultural appropriation that goes on specifically in this case with Native Americans, because it happens a lot,
mm-hmm.
is that it's done just for fashion. It's done just for, you know, like to create, you know, like, oh, like, look, this, you know, this feather looks really cool. Like, I look really mysterious and interesting with this, or, you know, like with my makeup done, you know, like a Native American, you know, my idea of a Native American princess would be, sort of like, it's just like really weird and really kind of creepy when you actually think about the history of that.
So the other performance artist. No, this is because the kids have just gone completely
so...
over. I'm going to take this 180. So there's this gay porn star, Colby Keller,
mm-hmm.
who has sold all of his possessions
mm-hmm.
except for a framed picture of Lenin.
Vladimir, not John, right?
Correct.
Good. Okay.
And he has now purchased a big van and is going to go across all 50 states and through Canada
mm-hmm.
and basically pick up guys in every state, fuck them in the van, and videotape it.
Wow.
For art. For art, you know, sort of like what Marina Abramovich does. You know, sort of an ode to her. So that I can sort of understand and I can digest, I think, because it's so carnal in nature.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's also, it's similar, but it's not the same. And again, you know, like, part of the problem is whatever his actual heritage is, Shia LaBeouf is fundamentally a white American. Mm-hmm. Like,
correct.
And so to appropriate I fucking cannot remember the name of the artist who did basically the same thing it's not interesting. And that's the worst thing art can be. Like, art can be kind of provocative. It can be even racist or sexist or homophobic. Yeah, don't, be interesting. Like, create a conversation. And there was a conversation about Shia LaBeouf's piece, but it was mostly about, why is he doing this? And also, like, as much as I fucking hate the guy, the Jerry O'Connell thing was kind of funny.
Yes.
Where he opened up a store right next to it. Like, I can't even remember what it was called, but it was just like, it was the entire purpose was to make fun of Shia LaBeouf. And that's kind of great. Like, that is actually a better piece of art than Shia LaBeouf did. but yeah, I mean, like, I'm not even an art snob in that I think that, you know, art should be confined to any real rules. Like, you can make almost anything into art, but you have to actually put some work into it. That's the thing, is art is all about intent. It's all about intent. And without that, it's not art. And if your intent is shitty, then your art is shitty. Period.
Period. You don't. I think you can use Go Girl on your period.
Can you?
I think so.
No, I mean, there's a separate item. You may not know about this because you are a gay man. But there's a separate product called the Diva Cup, which is specifically designed as a reusable menstrual blood collector, panty keeper wearer.
So it's
basically the same thing except without a hole.
So
you put it inside.
Okay. Well, why not just use a tampon?
Well, because tampons are. I mean, there's a few reasons not to use tampons.
Okay, a pad.
Also, a few reasons not to use pads. The pad can be not absorbent enough, depending on how heavy your flow is. They're messy. They're difficult to throw away. They create waste, no matter what way you cut it.
Going back to Hobby Lobby.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I was getting very uncomfortable with this line.
So we're going to keep talking. I mean, this is like the vagina episode, apparently. Including Shia LaBeouf.
No, so for going back to Hobby Lobby, so I think what women should do as a protest is take all of their used tampons and used pads and just, you know, get like a demonstration in front of every Hobby Lobby store, just fling them at the store.
Wouldn't it be better if they actually like made like some sort of craft out of them? Like, that would be more on point, really. Especially if they bought all the other crafting supplies from Michaels.
Well, if a great percentage of the protesters are lesbians, then yes. Because we know the lesbians love their crafts. No, and I figure, because I still remember Donita Sparks at the 92 Lollapalooza,
mm-hmm.
or no, Reading Festival, I think it was, you know, throwing her used tampon into the crowd because the guys pissed her off. Of course, then they threw it back at her. we should do more like, I was, years ago, back in college,
mm-hmm.
a friend, a friend was complaining that her boyfriend was ignoring her and just playing with the PlayStation, like, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know how to stop this, right? She goes, how do I stop this? I said, well, when you're on your period, you take your tampon out and you wring it all over the PlayStation. You know, using endometrium as a tool of terrorism, I think, is ingenious.
That's because you grew up during the age of ACT UP and let's all donate blood to the blood supply if they don't do anything about our.
Is it too extreme? Is it too extreme for people's tastes nowadays?
I think it is, but that's all. I mean, but you all, I think people also really need to realize that it was a completely different thing. Like, people who don't, you know, like, and look, I still haven't watched How to Survive a Plague, because it freaks me out too much. Like, to remember how, like, horrifying that time was. But it was, I mean, it was a completely different time. There was a huge death sentence hanging over tons of people, and the government was doing fuck all about it.
I suppose. I don't know. I just have
blood terrorism. No, and I mean, like people still like there'll still be chick tracts and stuff that bring that up. And you know, again, like the 80s ACT UP gay rights movement was significantly more extreme than anything that came after, but I have a lot more affinity and sympathy and fondness for those people than I do for anyone in HRC. I kind of really despise the HRC.
I hate HRC. I hate GLAAD. I just, you know, the whole It Gets Better, the Trevor Project. I hate, 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 and that's coming from a homo.
I am
a maladjusted homo at that.
My problem with it is, and you may feel differently about this, but my problem with it is I think that there's room at the table for all of those points of view. The problem I have with the HRC specifically, and you know, like it, the It Gets Better stuff and the other stuff, I know a little bit less about than I do about the HRC issues. But the one that I really dislike about the thing I really dislike about the HRC is them trying to sort of sweep everything that doesn't fit into this very family friendly homo mold under the table. Like, no. Don't wear leather and chains and stuff, and don't be trans. That's not really what we're about right now. Like, we'll get to you guys. Don't worry, but we're gonna keep this under the rug for right now. Like,
yeah, we're gonna totally we want to assimilate.
Yeah,
you know, we want to be these white bread Republican whites.
And like, and the fact of the matter is that that's not what acceptance and tolerance are about.
Nope.
Acceptance and tolerance are about, you know, looking at things that make you uncomfortable and going, well, that's not for me, but, you know, fucking live and let live. Like, that is the country I want to live in. I want to live in a country where there's a guy who really, really hates gay guys and really hates black people and really hates everyone who doesn't look exactly like him, but is also kind of like, yeah, well, what are you going to do about it? Like, not shooting people, not trying to get laws passed to fucking discriminate against them, is just a personally really bigoted and really prejudiced, because, you know, we all have our things that we don't like about other people, but we also all learn to live with other people. Like, that's sort of how it should be.
Yeah.
Rainbow.
Jesus.
But yeah, I really hate the HRC. That Don't Fly the Trans Flag shit was just the fucking last straw for me. Of them, like, no, we're not doing that right now. Like, are you fucking kidding me?
All I can say, all I have to add to this is I just hate them.
Yeah.
That's it. I think.
Is this it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Is that all there is?
That's all there is. No, I mean, what else is there? I mean, all I do now is watch old movies.
Old
movies.
Well, let's take a second and talk sport. Just sport. We're gonna keep it to 2 minutes on sport.
So
minute number one, World Cup.
Hooray, World Cup! U.S. did better than expected. U.S. has a lot of work ahead of itself. Soccer has not made it in this country. Soccer doesn't need to be made in this country.
Although it does if we ever want to win the World Cup, because we will never get a quality team unless we start fucking paying for it the way that other countries pay for it.
Well, I mean, in the sense of having the viewership that, you know, football or basketball or whatnot has.
No.
It's not going to reach that level. It won't. But that's okay. If you don't like soccer, that's fine. I don't want to hear about it. Like, I don't care if you hate the diving, if you think they're all pussies.
Also, okay, so one thing, since you mentioned the diving thing. If you hate diving, and you watch professional basketball, you're a hypocrite.
Or hockey.
I don't know about hockey, but I do know from watching basketball game. Like, I'm like, yeah, no. Anyone who complains about dives in fucking in
it happens in every
professional
sport.
It totally does.
Every sport. So just shut the fuck up.
And at least in fucking soccer, if you, like, for all the time that you miss while people are pretending to be injured, they add that shit back on.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no clock stopping. You just add that on at the end.
Yeah, and like the thing that really bugged me this whole World Cup so far, mm-hmm. having people bitch about the round robin format of the group stages, how they didn't understand how that could end in a tie, but now, you know, it goes to extra time and the penalty kicks afterwards. Like, if you don't understand it, read up on it, or just shut the fuck up.
Not only that, but, like, seriously, there is no better format for high-level tournament play than World Cup rules.
Yes.
It is absolutely the best.
So, yeah. Yay, World Cup.
Yay, World Cup.
Okay.
Wimbledon.
I really wanted Federer to win. I really did, because I remember in 2001, fourth round in center court, the match between him and Pete Sampras. Pete Sampras, I think, was seeded first or second. He was favored to win his 15th Grand Slam. Or, no, at that point it was going to be 14th.
Which year was this?
This was 2001.
Well, this wasn't the year that Sampras was sick, right?
No. Okay. This was the year afterwards. And he was, you know, he was making his return to the top. And then a little-known Swiss named Roger Federer. Little chunky, mm-hmm. with a little ponytail, in center court, just went at it with Pete Sampras, wins in 5 sets. And that basically ended Pete Sampras' career. I think he won the U.S. Open that year afterwards. Mm-hmm. But after that, Pete Sampras was just a shell of himself. Roger Federer defeated him. And then in 2004, in 2002, there was a brief, you know, tumultuousness going on in tennis in 02, 03, and then Roger Federer grabbed tennis by the balls in 04 and dominated for years and years and years. So he had a wonderful tournament. Djokovic was the winner. He deserves it. He's a great, great player. What else is there? The young kids coming up, Gregor Dimitrov, Nick Kyrgios, who ousted Rafa Nadal in the fourth round.
Mm-hmm.
These kids are starting to come up, and that's exciting.
It's always exciting when a new round of talent arrives.
Oh, yeah.
In any sport. It's breathtaking.
And what makes it more significant here is you still have the great four of men's tennis. You still have Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, and Andy Murray firmly planted at the top for every major. Because I think Murray's ranking now, he's going to drop to 10, I think. But it's... tennis, I mean, it's unfortunate and coincided with World Cup. I would have watched more tennis because I always watch Wimbledon all the time.
And going back for a second to World Cup too, like this has been a fantastic World Cup.
It's so amazing.
Good. It's by far, it's definitely the best one that I can remember that I can think of.
I only go back to 94.
Yeah. 94 was the one that was held in the US and that was when I started really watching it. Yeah.
Just 20 years ago.
Oh, Jesus. Let's see. What else? Other sports, Dodgers are in first place in their division.
Woo-hoo!
The A's just got Jeff Samardzija from the Cubs. They look dangerous. They really do.
Is Samardzija is he the Cuban or?
No,
who's the Cuban player on the A's? Do you remember?
Yeah, it's, what's his name? They all begin with a Y.
O'Neal, Cespedes.
I'm trying to remember. Once World Cup's over, like speaking of ignoring other sports, once World Cup's over, I'm going to be a lot more Dodgers focused.
Jeff Samardzija, he was, in college, he was the wide receiver for the Notre Dame football team.
Oh.
Got drafted by the Cubs, decided to play baseball instead of football.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's really, really, really good pitcher. You can never have enough pitching in baseball.
No. Dodgers pitching, by the way, is looking really good.
Clayton Kershaw.
Holy shit.
I'm going to say this now. When his career is done, he's going to be better than Koufax. By far. By far. Because he's going to last longer than... He's going to have a longer career.
I mean, Koufax, when he started in the majors, was already having shoulder elbow problems.
Yeah. He retired in 66 at the age of 30.
Yeah.
Wow. After winning that World Series. Losing that World Series, I'm sorry.
But he pitched... Was that the same series he pitched a no-hitter in the World Series?
No, he's never pitched a no-hitter in the World Series.
Was it... Oh, sorry. It was there was a championship.
Well, he pitched Game 7 in Minnesota in 65. A two-hitter, I believe it was.
I thought he pitched a no-hitter in the NLCS.
Only two pitchers have pitched a no-hitter in the playoffs. Don Larsen, 56, the perfect game.
Yeah.
And Roy Halladay several years ago. Only two no-hitters in the playoffs. What else was there? Yeah, Kershaw is, I've seen him pitch in person. Mm-hmm. I've never seen him pitch like this.
No. It's 36 scoreless innings, which is, the record is 59, held by Hershiser.
Who's a broadcaster for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Funny enough, he broke Don Drysdale's record in 88 while Don Drysdale was a commentator for the Dodgers. Funny how that happens.
And, I mean, 88 was, for Dodgers fans, the year.
Yes.
That was the last gasp.
Now, the thing about this Dodger, I don't have any affinity to them.
There's a few players who I really like.
I think it's a little personal for me, just because I was too close to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have that affinity towards. Like, I love Oakland. I love their players.
I would dearly fucking love to see a World Series that was Oakland versus Oakland, LA. That would be amazing.
That would be. It would be so poorly rated, which is great.
Well, and it wouldn't help that all the games would be on at like midnight on the East Coast.
Ah, fuck the East Coast. They could keep their fucking Yankees and Red Sox. See how awful the Red Sox are? They made 3 errors in 1 inning yesterday. Let's see. I think that's it.
Okay.
We did more than 2 minutes on sports.
We did. We did a lot more than 2 minutes on sports.
But whatever.
I got to show off my lack of ability to remember stats, which is why I would always be a terrible sports writer / broadcaster.
That's why God invented the sports reference sites.
Yeah. No.
And that was my Bible. really yeah. was.
And it's easier to fudge if you're a writer. It's much harder to do if you're Vin Scully, which is why Vin Scully's insane memory is insane and great to listen to.
Well, that's why he has producers. They hand him notes.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So we're going to close this. Subscribe to the BNJ podcast on iTunes through the RSS feeds.
Well, we have an iTunes one there?
Yeah, we have an iTunes page. We've had it. So it's like episode 4.
So this is proof that I don't ever use iTunes for anything other than my local iTunes on my computer. I don't ever use iTunes. Sorry.
That's all right.
Sorry, iTunes.
It's there. I created that just for convenience.
Yeah, no. It's a good idea. I forgot that we even had one.
You know, I think we should do a webpage. Since I didn't want to do a webpage for the podcast because I wanted to see how long we would do it. But since this is episode 12, I think we should.
You want
to
do it? Yeah. All right, let's do it.
As we take care of business on the podcast.
On the podcast proper.
Yeah. So subscribe. We're going to close this with another lovely pop song. Well, this was not pop, actually. By a band called Moo. It's this Japanese lady, Mutsumi Kanamori, and her husband, superstar DJ Maurice Fulton. They play the creepiest music on the face of this planet. Here's a minor hit, dance floor hit, Paris Hilton. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Move your body, jump your body, shake your body, press your tongue.